Our gospel lesson comes from the Gospel of Mark, and this is the very beginning of that gospel. So hear now how God is speaking to you through these words of the Gospel of Mark. The beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. As it is written in the prophet Isaiah, "See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way. The voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight.' John the baptizer appeared in the wilderness, proclaiming a baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins. And people from the whole Judean countryside and all the people of Jerusalem were going out to him and were baptized by him in the river Jordan, confessing their sins. Now John was clothed with camel's hair, with a leather belt around his waist, and he ate locusts and wild honey. He proclaimed, 'The one who is more powerful than I is coming after me. I am not worthy to stoop down and untie the thong of his sandals. I have baptized you with water, but he will baptize you with the Holy Spirit.'" Here ends the reading. Thanks be to God. And when Jesus was born, he was born to a people whose country was occupied, ruled by the largest empire of the time, Rome. Rome and the Roman Empire. And Jesus was born this poor, teenage, unwed girl in a filthy animal trough in the barn of an inn in a backwater, irrelevant village out on the outer edge of that empire. The Prince of Peace, the Messiah, the Christ, arrived under those conditions and arrived peacefully and humbly. At least as peaceful as any birth can be. I've never heard of anyone actually say, "Well, that was peaceful." And there is a tradition in an old story of Jesus' birth that it was done completely without pain, and it happened very quickly, and Mary glowed in love and filled the chamber with light. I have a feeling it was probably a normal birth. But peaceful in the sense of quietly off to the side, out of sight, without fanfare of loud rumbling or trembling mountains or voices shouting down from the sky. Just a star that only a few paid attention to, and some shepherds out in the countryside to whom an angel came down to tell them what had happened. All quiet. If you weren't paying attention, you would have missed it. Shh. Did something just happen? Has the world just been changed somehow? It's so easy to forget that first Christmas involving these, what for the most part, are just these rather irrelevant poor people of a conquered nation and a backwards religion in a land that was socially and geographically and economically so far from the center of the universe that they just didn't matter. So easy to forget that was the first Christmas. People might say, "What? God come to earth as a Jewish boy born of an illiterate teenage girl in Judea? God is already here. Caesar, the divine one with riches and power and military might, speaking Latin and versed in the ways of politics and war. That's your God incarnate here on earth. Not a little baby boy." It's easy to forget that the first Christmas came so quietly and unnoticed, partly also because Christmas is so in our face today. It's so prevalent. When did Christmas begin this year? September? August? I remember being out at the mall in June and looked in the window at the Hallmark store, and the Christmas ornaments were already available. In June, 6 months ahead of time. And we're also, we live in this overwhelmingly Christian culture, even if a church attendance or church membership is down from years past amongst the whole population, and it's not the official religion here. The Western world is so entrenched in Christianity, and that's so much of who we are comes out of this Christian tradition, that Christmas is completely unavoidable. It's part of our culture, even if the religious parts get forgotten. You know, think of corporations. You don't think of corporate boards sitting around the table discussing theology or doing Bible readings, but I bet most of the year they're talking about Christmas. Because for so many companies, this last month of the year is the holiday shopping that drives them into the black, where their profit point comes. It's really important to their bottom line. Christmas doesn't come quietly anymore. It doesn't come as a surprise anymore. It's front and center. It's on the radio. It's on TV. It's in the stores. It's just everywhere. Everywhere. Even in non-Christian cultures, Japan has a real fascination with Christmas. Only 1% of the population is Christian, but much of the population has really embraced Christmas. They love the trees and the songs and the tinsel and the ornaments and the giving of gifts, all of this stuff that we've turned Christmas into, the sort of fantasy Norman Rockwelling of Christmas. They love all that stuff. It's important to their economy somewhat, not certainly nowhere near as much as it is here, but there's nothing religious about it there. They just like all the stuff that comes with Christmas. I also find it curious here that we have those that rebel against what they call the de-religionizing of Christmas. These people who are upset because the store clerks might say Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas, or that the decorated trees in the public squares are now called holiday trees instead of Christmas trees. And these people, they like to think that there's a war on Christmas going on, and I don't think there is. I think there's too much writing on Christmas, and certainly financially it's an incredibly important holiday. This whole season, I don't think there's a war on Christmas. I think what there is a recognition that people are in the stores buying stuff for other religious holidays as well and celebrating other holidays, Hanukkah and Kwanzaa. Certainly New Year's is right around the corner. There's just a lot of stuff that happens in December, and I think what stores and others are doing is simply recognizing that we live in this diverse culture, diverse religions, and then we also have people who practice no religion. And maybe taking Christmas at least partly out of the stores is a good thing, to separate it from the money machine might in some ways be kind of beneficial, at least in a theological way. So I wonder, how did Christmas become so entwined with the consumer aspect? And all these high expectations of wanting to have the perfect Christmas, with everyone dressed just right and the meal glorious and excessive and the presents numerous and perfect and perfectly appreciated because they were so perfectly chosen with such perfect deliberation, and the receivers are all perfectly grateful. And the children say, "This was the best Christmas ever. Mission accomplished. Well done." And this kind of anxiety about that part of Christmas is so much a part, a manufactured part of a prosperous industrial age culture and nation. That anxiety over the trappings of Christmas is a total first world kind of anxiety. It's the anxiety of a people who can afford perfection and may feel somewhat cheated if they don't get it. And I find myself buying into this as well. My family come for Christmas to hang out for a few days, and I want to make sure that everything is perfect for them, that all the food is great, and that they have a good time and enjoy it. But there is that, and that's just kind of good hospitality, but there's that extra pressure that comes just because it's Christmas. Now, why should it be any different than any other time you have people over? I don't know. But there is that pressure. And there is no war on Christmas, I don't think, except maybe the war that we Christians ourselves have brought to it. The war that we have been waging, replacing the Christmas story, or at least letting it be buried under all of these other trappings of this consumerist, nostalgic sentimentalism. And I say this as one who recognizes my part in this system, and as one who commits the great sin of decorating my tree every year with cultural idols and icons. It's almost all Star Trek and Star Wars ornaments, Lord of the Rings. I don't know. What kind of message does that say that I decorate my tree with all this cultural stuff? Maybe I ought not to. But I like it. I like it. And maybe it's time for us to, as Christians, to wage a war on Christmas, or at least what Christmas has become. Or maybe as Christians, we don't want to wage war. Let's say to wage peace on all of the unpeaceful aspects of the holiday. All of the unpeaceful aspects that we've brought to Christmas. And in the midst of this, I think one of our greatest prophetic acts as Christians could be to preserve the sanctity of Christmas by doing what Moses and Jesus did, was to say no to Pharaoh, to say no to Caesar, to not participate in all of this system, or to participate not as willingly, to proclaim through our word and action that, you know what, I don't have to go into debt to enjoy Christmas. I don't have to spend all this money to have a perfect Christmas. I don't need to stress myself. To say that we don't need a pile of stuff under the tree, and that our tree doesn't have to be the biggest or the most decorated tree in town. Or that to say that we don't have to judge our value by the number of holiday parties we're invited to or the number of them that we host. And it's not that any of those are wrong in and of themselves. They're all fun. It's all good. There's nothing wrong with fellowship or putting up some decorations to remind us of the season. But to ask, are we doing them in a healthy way that respects the gift that is Jesus? You know, the best Christmas ever was the first one, the one that Jesus was born. Why do we think that we can do better than that? Why do we think that we have to try? Jesus is, as they say, the reason for the season. Enjoy all the great stuff that Madison Avenue offers to us, but don't be defined by their narrative. Be defined by Jesus' narrative, Jesus' counter-narrative of grace and love and being present and being peaceful. Now, so how do we honor Christ in what we're doing? The Christ who was born in a manger quietly, who lived his life for others, eventually going to the cross because he refused to follow the narrative of Caesar and the narrative of his religious leaders and the cultural leaders of his community. Now, this Christian act of saying to a world that says to us, be busy, 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 and buy, 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 spend, 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 hoard, 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 and expect, expect, expect. We can say to them, slow down. Buy only what you need. Spend less on wants. Give generously to others. And expect nothing. Except maybe to expect that through disengaging we can know the peace of Christ. And I think it's much easier to find the peace of Christ than it is to try to find peace by jumping on Madison Avenue's treadmill. Because there's no peace there. They don't want us to know peace because we'll only listen to them if we're anxious. I mentioned in a sermon a few months ago about how advertising preys on our anxiety. Not about buy our product because it's good and you've already determined that you have a need for this and it fulfills whatever it is that you want to do. Let's say, no, buy our product or you'll be an outsider. You'll be scorned. You'll be looked at as a funny person. Like, do we really define ourselves by our dishwashing detergent? Oh, you use the generic? Oh. No, we're a Cascade family. This relationship is just not going to work. It's so easy to forget how peaceful and unnoticed Christ's birth was, because it's so loud now. And with this message of buying our way to peace, instead of sitting back and opening our hearts to the peace that's already here in Jesus Christ. And today we can make a prophetic action against some of this stuff. And soon we're going to bring our pledges for the next year up forward to the gift box in front of the Christmas tree. And certainly there's nothing wrong with the Christmas tree or the wreaths or any of this. It reminds us of what we're waiting for, just as the nativity does and the other decorations and the wise men making their slow journey to the manger. These are all things that can remind us of what we're about and who we are. And so we will bring our pledges and offerings forward in a couple of moments. And that's our chance to say, in the midst of all of this craziness of the world, that what we do here in this sanctuary, what we do here in this building, whenever we come together as Christ's people, it's a way of saying that what we do here is the most important part of our lives. Because what we do here changes what we do out there, beyond these walls. What we do here affects how we live in the world. As we go out and can say there is hope to the hopeless, there's peace to those who don't know it. We'd say there is joy to those who suffer. There is love to the abandoned and marginalized. And not just to say it, but to live it. To live it as well. And to back up what we proclaim as well with the power of our wallets. And I don't say that just because I'm a preacher. I don't say that it's important just because I'm a preacher. I think I'm a preacher and a pastor because I think that's really important. Therapist could probably disentangle all that in a couple of years. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that's part of it, because I do believe it's important. Really important. It's our chance to say there's another way. The way of Jesus, whose quiet birth changed the world for the better. And so take a few minutes now. You've received your pledge cards in the mail. If you don't have it with you, there's some more back on the hymnal stand back there. But you have a few minutes now. Linda's going to play some music and fill out that cards prayerfully and faithfully. Maybe you've already filled them out. You have a few minutes now to do that and ask that you bring them forward. You can put them in the gift box as a gift to Jesus, and also ask that you bring up your offering. We're not going to take a separate offering today. Bring that up along with your St. Francis food pantry offering. So God gave us the gift of life in Jesus, and now we can respond with our gifts to Jesus.